for anyone who's listening now, you want to learn more about your own PK psychic abilities, Ingo Swann is the master. Okay, so, and Ellie is your connection. I'm talking with Ellie Flippin, and she's the niece of Ingo Swann. The cool thing about that is that she's the niece of Ingo Swann, all right? My favorite story when we talked before, we're just going to dive right in, was when Ingo gave her a warning about a certain intersection. So Ellie, that when you have an uncle like that who has all these abilities, did he explain immediately why, or did he just tell you so you could go out and discover what was the different unique thing about that intersection?
Well, it was quite a warning. He was very explicit in that it was a warning. It was a directive, and anybody who knew my uncle knew that if there were directives, you followed them to the T. So it was he could be very intimidating in that manner. So I didn't really want to cross him, literally. I didn't want to cross the street, and I didn't want to cross him because it was such a powerful thing. At other times, he would always say, carry something with you, such as money, if something happens, or give advice about how to traverse the world of New York City at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more general in nature, just common sense for living in an urban area. But this explicitly was ultra normal, beyond normal, in that he could see something at that intersection and actually had things he could point to where accidents happened. Pedestrians actually were hit numerous times. There were several accidents. So it was really supported in the hard facts at the end of the day.
Okay, we're going to just back up a little bit here. Ingo Swann, known as the grandfather of remote viewing, and Ingo's niece Ellie is in charge of the estate and all of the things that are coming out now. Several books being put out posthumously. One of them we're going to talk about is The Windy Song. It's a story of reincarnation, and it's a fabulous novel, short novel. You can read it in a GIF. Anyway, Preserving the Psychic Child, we talked about that before, but also another one to check out is Penetration, the special edition. This has an extra chapter, chapter 9, which deals on with the remote viewing of Mars. Psychic Literacy, fantastic book. I love that because it includes some of the things he talks about learning as a child, the communal psychic capabilities, when a group of people, like if one person says, hey, I see this and maybe it's coming, well, that's okay. But when several people all tune into the same thing and say, all right, I'm getting a sense. And he calls it in the book, they had an itch. They didn't really think about psychic stuff. They called it an itch. And they were right. Mm-hmm. So I love that. We'll come back to some of this. But with this, there's so much with his information and being part of the remote viewing program, working with the CIA, there's on CIA.gov, there's a dynamic PK experiment with Ingo Swann talking about his abilities to change the numbers on a machine. I'm just going to put it that way because they're trying to get the physics to apply to this to see if he makes an impression. And sitting through two steel walls between him and this unit, he's able to make an impression. So these are studies that validate his ability, and the remote viewing is what he specialized in. As I'm doing this own, you know, my stuff, he calls it, and it's maybe written down somewhere, applied knowing, where it's already something we are inherently born with, but getting through the programming of thinking, oh, this is just an accident, oh, it isn't important, oh, it can't do, all that stuff of belittling and demeaning the ability because it's intimidating when you're around somebody like Ingo and he just says, okay, don't go to that intersection, and you know why. Then this is real. So I just wanted to, you know, for anyone who's listening now, you want to learn more about your own PK psychic abilities. Ingo Swann is the master. Okay, so, and Ellie is your connection. Thank you, Ellie. Windy Song is the book on reincarnation. It's an excellent novel. Where did this come from?
He actually wrote this short story in the early 70s, and it sat for a long time in a box, like so many things of his, in his office, just waiting for the right time to come out. I know he did try with several publishers to publish it. He probably got close at some point to being able to publish it, but there was never an appetite, I think, for this story, this narrative to be told in the way that it was. The underlying story is really the story of reincarnation, and it's told through different characters, probably representing different viewpoints of the discussion on reincarnation and the societal impact of just even talking about reincarnation. And so different characters play different roles in this debate. And it's a story of the debate and ultimately a coming together of a family and multiple families, which makes it just the most beautiful story at the end for me, and one that every time I read it, I cry. Yeah. Just because it is such a beautiful story and the debate that takes place and unfolds throughout it.
Well, yeah, there are a couple of characters I really don't like. Just right out front, and I know that's their point and that's their purpose, and I don't like them, and it worked. And so they're not helpful. And but the story, it's amazing now, especially it was written in the 70s. And so when we've had these other stories of reincarnation coming out and being publicized, there's a wonderful tie-in, because this gives you what it might be like to be in a family where someone comes through and has all these memories, and other people are trying to even consciously figure out how that works and integrate that, because it isn't their awareness and it isn't their knowing, so it must not be true. But when you're around somebody who continues to bring forth these memories and this accurate information, then you start to question, well, why am I doubting? What is the cognitive dissonance here about? And that, I think, is what we're dealing with as a society. And he's saying, you know, if it hasn't started already, it's coming, the psychic renaissance. What do you feel now? There's this big book coming out, and we're going to let's go ahead and drop that information with the International Remote Viewing Conference that's coming up, and Nick Cook is going to be presenting Ingo's works. This is fantastic.
Yeah, so in our process, so we worked with Nick Cook. He's a journalist and writer. He writes a number of stories under his own name. He also ghostwrites and helps families tell stories of an individual who might be in their family who has a story to tell or a narrative to tell. And actually, just to backtrack, very early on, we were working on an Ingo Swan documentary. And as part of that process, it started when Ingo was alive. And Ingo said, there's one person that I want to have interview me for this documentary, and that one person is Nick Cook. And that was because of a book he had written called The Hunt for Zero Point Energy. Mm-hmm. Having been an aviation journalist initially and then just kind of being introduced to this world very early on, and then following that, the breadcrumbs along there to end up with this book on zero point energy. And Ingo, having read that, said, there's this one person I want to tell my story, and that's Nick Cook. And so Nick, very early on, was the interviewer in this documentary process. So after Ingo passed away, we just kind of kept that and really brought Nick in to tell the story of Ingo, to write a biography of Ingo. And what we found in the process is there's so much already out on Ingo. There's not a substantial amount that we could add that Ingo hasn't already himself put out there. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't want to take away from what Ingo had put out, and thought, okay, well, what's another means? And while we're thinking about this, part of the information that we had given to Nick was a series of miscellaneous folders and papers and stuff, so he could get kind of a flavor of Ingo's writings and who he was and whatnot. And within this, he found a series of folders together, which was a kind of haphazard manuscript for something Ingo called Secrets of Psychic Revelation. And so he started to really use that as part of his basis to understanding Ingo's take on consciousness as a whole. And while that's happening, I came across another manuscript that we had actually given to the University of West Georgia, where Ingo's archives are located, and it was called The Emerald Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And we found some crossover and but very different, but working on the same pathways for these two different manuscripts. And Nick was able to bring this together, these two manuscripts, into a one, I would say, holding place to think about, okay, this, all of this is about Ingo's concept on human consciousness and what we have and how we can gain it.
Hold on. Just a minute. Just that cut out just a little bit. So it's all about consciousness?
All about human consciousness and all the facets that may entail. So Nick was able to carve away and to to place it. And I like to think of this book like a China, Russian nesting doll, where there's a big one and you pull a layer off and a layer off and a layer off. And so what Nick has done is created this I guess compendium of these two works and renamed them and written before and after. So there's a narrative from Nick. It's called Ingo Swann's Great Loss. He has the introduction and a wrap up to that. And in between Nick's works is what we call Resurrecting the Mysterious.
Okay, hold on. Resurrecting the Mysterious. And the book is called?
It's called Resurrecting the Mysterious, Ingo Swann's Great Lost Work.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a break. Got to come back because there's more to this, and we also want to mention the information about the remote viewing conference where Nick is going to present this information, and the book is going to be put out for sale. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest is Ellie Flippin. Ingo Swann's niece talking about the lost works that are being combined, and Nick Cook is doing or has done a fantastic job of pulling this all together, and that's what's going to be presented, the information, the background on that, at the International Remote Viewing Conference. And this is fantastic. Because of all the COVID stuff, they're doing it online, and I'm like, well, this couldn't happen any better because I couldn't go to Las Vegas, and that's where this thing is always held. This is giving it, I think, a wider viewing. And especially with this new works coming out from Ingo, that ought to be a fantastic presentation. So again, Ellie Flippin is my guest. What's the name of the book?
It's called Resurrecting the Mysterious, Ingo Swann's Great Lost Work.
And a bunch of file folders that he just happened to have set aside. And it's, you know, those kind of things. He has so many little gems. I want to go back real quick that the communal psychic capabilities. And this is from his book, Psychic Literacy. And in there, he talked about, you know, learning from other people and being able to connect the dots. And the ancients had a way of using multiple seers, multiple oracles, multiple visionaries, multiple psychics to try and get a better grip on what they might see for the future, to foretell, to prognosticate. And what they did then was to compare notes and see if they had a common thread. So he said this wasn't anything new to him because when he was growing up in Telluride, the community being a mining community and the possibility of avalanches in the area just getting to and from, there were a lot of hazards that they had to duck and cover from. And one of the things that the community would do just on their own without calling it anything special, except I've got an itch or an idea or a feeling or a sense, was one person would say, I have this. And then another person would say, and there were a couple times that he wrote that this was incredible. The phones would start ringing as the lines start connecting, and they would say there's something going to happen, an avalanche in this area. And then they would shut the mine down because there were several people. And another day it was a school that they shut the school down. It was not a cloud in the sky. Everything was all beautiful. And then these things would come to pass. So he considered this just a natural part of growing up. It wasn't weird. It wasn't odd. It wasn't unusual. It was just life. And that, I think, gave him an edge with his own abilities. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah.
So with this, in Ingo Swann's Lost Work, this is just coming onto the market now. People will be able to get it after the presentation.
After the presentation, yes. And it has been a labor of immense love because it is very raw. It was very raw. It was just notes, some chapters, and taking two different manuscripts, if you will, even though there are similarities, to take them and to combine them and then to write narrative around that. This book is well over 500 pages.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot of meat.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and it is heavy, and it's heavy in the sense of bringing forth, like you said, that applied knowing, you know, reaching back and knowing there's all of this stuff that's around us. It's completely all around us, but we've been trained not to pay attention to it, not to believe in it.
Yes, right? Yes, that's the sad part. Yes. He really does a wonderful, and I'm talking about Ingo stuff, and especially that psychic literacy, of laying ground rules and a way of activating your inner sense, that already awareness that you have that just hasn't been brought to light. His approach wasn't like it was foreign and you had to go through a certain step-by-step process and you could only go so far because, you know, there were certain rules and structure. Nobody really knows how to teach it because it isn't something that is taught. It's something that is applied and bringing it forth and activating. Pay attention, slow down, look at your surroundings. Feel what your body is telling you. Are you getting hints and clues? Does somebody have a miracle that happened to them and they had a miracle healing? That's a really good example in there. Do you know what you remember what I'm talking about with this one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Explain that one.
In the new book, Resurrecting the Mysterious, some of it seems to be written at the same time as psychic literacy. And the young boy with the fish skin disease, that's the one where it's highlighted in both psychic literacy and in Resurrecting the Mysterious. And approached it like he had the ability to change that fact with his mind, mm-hmm. that you could think these things away. Everybody has that ability to heal themselves in some way. And this young man believed that it could be healed, and it was healed. That through, I guess, hypnosis, that I can heal this. This doctor can heal it. The young boy believed he could heal it. That conveyed to his body that he could heal it himself, and it was gone. And it wasn't really until the boy became cognizant of the fact that maybe this wasn't normal that it ceased to work.
Yes. Yes. That's a huge problem because then the mind comes in and says, oops, you didn't really do what you did. And then you undo your programming or you put a block in it anyway. And the one thing I've learned in doing my own improving is that the minute you allow someone else to determine your program, you lose your power because then it's under their rules and their game. And as long as you're the one writing your program, anything's possible. And you have to learn your own fine print. When do you have a better ability, a better awareness, a better connection that's stronger? And that also goes with, I really like the fact that he also tuned into astrology and said, this isn't mumbo jumbo. This stuff works. And isn't it funny when the scientists figure out that it works? Ha ha.
Well, it's all energies, right? And he spends time in psychic literacy and a great deal of time in Resurrecting the Mysterious talking about forces and the constructive and destructive power of both of those. And for astrology, he was an avid astrologer, I would think, a grandmaster type astrologer. He would say he's very hesitant to tell people what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he felt like people then could manifest that happening themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so was, what do you think? We talked about this lesson. What do you think? Because he really hated that where people could take something and then internalize that and make it happen for themselves. Because that, you know, obviously down deep, we have those abilities to manifest things, mm-hmm. to make things happen, to heal ourselves, to have so many more senses and awarenesses than we have learned because that information has been kept from us.
Yes. Okay, we're going to have to take a break. Again, my guest is Ellie Flippin. She's a niece of Ingo Swann. And absolutely, I've experienced these things. One thing I read about, you know, if you're going to be a shaman, if you're going to be a healer, if you're going to do any kind of PSI work, the first thing you do is work on yourself. And the minute you realize you can heal yourself, you've opened a floodgate of new abilities and new awareness and new learning and new ideas and new programming. And that's what Ingo Swann, and I believe, can help us connect to and reinforce that we are the ones here creating our reality. And when we tap into that knowing, then there's a whole new ballgame. So we're going to come back in just a few minutes talking about more of the newest work coming out from Ingo Swann. And also just remembering there are some other things that he put out. The Wendy song is one. Another one I like is Purple Fables. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, Ellie Flippin is with me talking about her uncle, Ingo Swann, Uncle Ingo. I feel like I know him just because of reading the information and having these little connections with, I was walking through the house thinking about, and I didn't realize this at the time, I was thinking about Ingo, and I think it was when we were, I think the Wendy song was there, but I don't think I had the Purple Fables, which was what I was looking at. And all of a sudden I had a card in my hand and it dropped on the floor, like somebody had pulled the card out of my hand and dropped on the floor. And I thought, because then I'd had a few other things that were happening, like a connect with owls and something that was supposed to be said about a piece of artwork and the book Cosmic Art that he worked on. And so I was having these little nudges and I wasn't paying any attention. And finally I said, oh my gosh, I realized what I had been thinking about, what I had been reading. I thought, that's Ingo Swann. And he said, light bulb. Okay, about time. He has a sense of humor. I have a vision of him just sitting in his, you know, in an easy chair with a cigar. And that was when I got that he really missed his cigars. And I thought, well, I don't know what that's about. And then I opened the book, and I can't remember, but at the beginning of the book, it was something about him smoking, you know, with a cigar. And I'm like, well, darn, that's that's it. That's the image. There he is. And then he said that, you know, where he's at right now, the cigars aren't there. And that's just too darn, that's as bad. It's just not the same. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you that I had no idea about the cigars until I read that little blurb at the beginning of one of the books. And I thought, well, no wonder he was trying to give me these messages and trying to say, you know, just, you know, keep doing this. And finally, when I got that thing pulled out of my hand, I'm like, what the heck? And said, oh, I bet that's Ingo. And it was like, yeah, light bulb, duh. I love talking with you because it inspires me. I love the connection that Ingo had, that he, his own sense of freedom to create, and the art that he produced is absolutely beautiful. There's one story that you told me about a work, I believe it was that something he created, and someone else had a problem, and she put this piece of artwork under her pillow and focused on getting a solution for the problem. Can you share that story? Because that's really powerful.
So Ingo's paintings were like his children. He kept them all around him, and he never really wanted to part with them. He just kept them everywhere around his studio. I think in the 70s, he did sell pieces, and he regretted it. So as he went into the 80s and into the 90s, he just kept these. But one of the paintings that he painted was he called Mother of Sorrows. It was the Mother Mary and all of the apparitions. So messages and warnings through each of the apparitions, he painted some concept of that into this painting of Mary. But a friend was able to convince him to sell it to another friend who became, in her own right, a friend of Ingo's. He always regretted that. He missed that painting terribly. So probably in his later years, just before, I think, when he was experiencing health problems and then was declining, he asked me if I could try to get that painting back. And as it turns out, just about the time when he asked this, the woman who had purchased it became mysteriously ill. Perfectly healthy, full of life, very vibrant individual, all of a sudden was in the hospital, and within a month she passed away.
Wow.
And this was at the same time he asked me to get this painting. I was like, oh, this is going to be difficult now. And then shortly thereafter, Ingo passed away. So they passed away within months of each other. Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh, this is going to be horribly difficult.
yeah, like, okay.
Right. Like, once somebody passes away, it's hard to, you know,
yeah,
something that was very special to her as mm-hmm. well to get that back. She was married. She did not have kids. And so I was trying to think strategically how to work with her, how to approach her husband mm-hmm. to get this back. And as I was getting closer to doing that, I came to understand that her husband, in the sorrow of losing his wife so dramatically and so quickly, actually took his own life.
Wow.
And at that point, I went, oh, this has gotten a lot worse. So I don't know where I'm going to find this painting, and as I said, they didn't have kids. And so how to approach it and how to get to it. So also happening at this time, my mother had given all of Ingo's the best, his masterpiece paintings, to the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their founder and director who I said, there's one more painting that belongs with these. It's like the missing child, and it needs to be returned to these other paintings because Ingo wanted everything together.
Yeah.
So it needs to be with them. And as it turned out, that Mother of Sorrows was on the cover of Ingo's book, All of the Great Apparitions of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So the original printing by Hampton Roads, the cover included this painting. And so she took the book and said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sleep with the book underneath my pillow because it has a painting on it. And I'm going to implore Ingo to please find a way to get this painting to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that in email. She's emailing me, telling me the story. This is what she's going to do. And the very next day, somewhere in this chain, right, of these two estates, the painting has ended up with another party. And this other party has now contacted through the general inquiry line to the American Visionary Art Museum. I have this painting. I think you guys will want it. Literally the very next day.
That was quick.
It was very quick. And I have, you know, that was pretty remarkable to me. But of course, remarkable is mundane.
Right.
Ingo Swann.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. This is nothing. This is Ingo at work. So I know he's working on it. And I felt relieved. But as it turned out, he wanted to sell the painting for a great deal of money to the museum.
Yes.
And the museum is mostly a lending museum. So they have some things in their permanent collection, but they're not endowed in any way, shape, or form like major museums are, and really didn't have the resources. And he wanted a phenomenal amount of money for it. So not only, I mean, we couldn't come up with the money, they couldn't come up with the money, and we really stressed that how much everybody who had been involved in this would really have liked to see it donated to the museum.
Yeah.
At which point he became very hostile and shut off and said, fine, he was going to go sell it somewhere else. And then I said, how could this be? Right? Ingo, I didn't understand, like, what happened? I mean, Ingo worked on it to get it to the museum. Why was there this horrible wrinkle? And how did this go bad so quickly, right? Like, everything was so lined up.
Right.
Why is it all of a sudden now we're at odds with each other and he's disappeared back into wherever he came from to try to sell this? So it was at the same time that we were doing an art show at the La Mama Gallery, which is literally catty corner to where Ingo's building was on the Bowery.
Oh.
And a number of like secondary pieces doing sort of a selling show. And the curator for that was a young man who was also, worked with one of the major auction houses in New York City, but his emphasis was on new American art. And I was like, okay, if his name is attached to this show, which was called A Remote View in Ingo Swann, and he's worked with one of the major auction houses in New York, this guy tries to sell the painting, our curator is going to know about it, right? Somebody's going to come to him.
Yes.
And he's going to know about it. So I email him and say, FYI, by the way, here's this long backstory, here's the drama. I spent days crying about this because I didn't understand. So I bet he's going to try to approach you about this painting. And like all young people, he totally ignores my email.
Oh, yeah, well, okay, fine.
And email comes, this guy does reach out to him.
He reaches out to him. Okay. Wait.
Uh-huh.
This is a good cliffhanger. Okay, so here it is. All this long, drawn-out drama, and all of a sudden it looks like that painting's going to slip through your hands, and Ingo supposedly on the job because it had appeared out of nowhere after she put it under her pillow and asked for Ingo's help. All right, so now we're going to come back. Ellie Flippin is Ingo's niece, and she has more stories than we have time to get into this hour, but okay, this is a really good one. So stick with us, and we're going to come back and find out what happened and where the picture ended up. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. This is Ingo Swann's niece, Ellie Flippin. And, you know, it would be such a wonderful, wonderful connection to have somebody who is so incredibly gifted as your relative and to be able to just pay attention and learn and take notes. Well, since we don't have that, I'm really thrilled to have the books and have that connection and to have listened to him on Art Bell years ago and to know that these abilities are part of all of us. It's a matter of just opening up your awareness and saying, okay, where do I start? And that's it. That's it. You don't have to take 50 billion courses and spend buku bucks. You can say, all right, I need to start playing with this. I need to start practicing. So this story is really fantastic. And I was so, when I saw the emails, I didn't know all the backstory completely about the couple that had the painting originally, but the Mother of Sorrows, Mary Mother of Sorrows, this painting has a really interesting circuitous route in being able to be tracked and possibly brought back to the family. So we were in the middle of the story, and the guy had approached this art dealer or art representative with, just like you said, I think he's going to contact you. And at first, you know, he said, yeah, okay, fine. So now he does contact. He contacts him. So what happens?
The very next day after my email.
Okay.
The very next day. Uh-huh. And, but he's not read, our curator's not read my email. So he is excited because now he has another piece to add to the show, and that's the premise of his email to me.
Mm.
Hey, Ellie, by the way, there's this great painting that would be great for the show.
Oh.
And I say, okay, you mean the one that I emailed you about yesterday?
But
I don't. I don't say that. I just simply say, awesome. Here's the thing. We are on a really tight line with this, and this is the most serious negotiation you're ever going to do, and you cannot mess this up, right? You have to get this painting, and you have to negotiate it. And I know from my prior negotiations with the AVAM, this seller, that he wants a lot of money. But I also know what he ultimately, the way of the painting is, after the original purchaser passed away and it went to her husband, and then her husband passed away, it went to a family member who then gave it to a friend who then sold it to this purchaser. And it's this purchaser that you were dealing with, right? So yeah. I have tracked the transaction, so I know exactly how much he has paid for it. I know how much it's worth. So I can say to our curator, this is what I think he will take, and I think this is what we can buy it for.
Mm-hmm.
And he expertly, because he works as an auction house, negotiates the sale, handles the transaction, gets the painting, and then is able to include it in the La Mama show, a remote view, whereas it's for the first time on public display.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing then it will be going to the A My Mom Turned Around purchased it. In the trend, purchased it and then donated it to the AVAM, in which then we, after the La Mama show concludes, we put it into our minivan and we drive it down to Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And turn it over to the American Visionary Art Museum. And when they knew it was coming back, their founder and director, Becca Hofberger, began conceptualizing an entire show around this one painting, and it ultimately was called the Great Mystery Show, and this painting was the centerpiece of that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, that's just a fantastic story. For one thing, the book, Ingo Swann, The Windy Song, which is the recent one, a novel of reincarnation, talks about just things that the connections that we have when we remember, and talks about the potential of having a reincarnation and what happens when you come through as a child with your memories pretty much intact and everybody else around you kind of, well, okay, fine, you know, and some people believe, some people don't, but there are indications that there's more to this story. I love the story. And I also like the fact that Ingo Swann is definitely working a little bit of magic here from beyond and between the lines and in making these connections work. And that to me says we have inspiration around us at all times from those who we do not see, but who might be inspiring us. You need to turn left. No, turn left. Turn left now. you need to make a sale. You really can't afford to have this painting. This painting is dragging you down. You know, it's making you depressed. Every day looking at that painting, you just don't feel good about it. Don't you want to sell it? Yeah, you want to sell it. Here's a guy you want to sell it to. So I'm just picturing him like, you know, the one on your left shoulder or right shoulder saying, yes, you want to sell it. The other one who's your representative says, I think he's right. You need to sell it. Okay. I have this whole dynamic going on with lots of invisible friends that help me So I kind of appreciate the other windows of knowing that Ingo represents and tells you about. And with this, it's the entire process of getting that painting where you're going, it was so easy. Why did we have this train wreck all of a sudden with a character who's difficult to work with? But that's life. That's life. And it worked out. It worked out. The train wreck was supposed to be there. He wanted it. He had a price. But see that you kept pursuing it and kept thinking, all right, and you followed through. I like the fact that you emailed the guy and the next day he says, oh, by the way, we found this. And you're going, uh-huh, yeah. Oh, that one. Oh, really? Okay, cool.
I think Ingo would say that whenever a door is open, you may
understand. Oh, darn it. It's cutting happening. Out. Ellie, it's cutting out. Okay, go ahead. So Ingo, you think Ingo would say, what would Ingo say?
He would say doors open and close for a number of reasons, and you may not understand it when it's happening at that particular point. But you will, after you're through them, understand.
Yeah.
And you can't appreciate it because you're in the middle of it, but you can, upon looking back, look at that experience and say, I had to go through that experience for a particular reason, for a particular set of knowledge or insight or whatever it may be, moving chess pieces around a board to ultimately get to your end game, right? Your road isn't always straight. Deviates and goes in different directions, but there's always a reason, he would say, and that there is always light even in darkness.
I want to remind people that this Nick Cook is coming out with the newest book, and this is a retrospect of a lot of his works that he had that were in file folders, and a continuation. You said it also includes some of the stuff from Psychic Literacy that combines that work, and this is going to be available. And it's a whole 500 pages. Is it little print?
No, it's actually larger. It's larger print, and it's got kind of a complicated concept because you have Nick's narrative at the beginning of the end, bookending this. Then you have Ingo's great concept of called Resurrecting the Mysterious, which also has an intro and an end. And in between are these two manuscripts that Nick has renamed The Hidden Revelation and then Beyond the God's Devices.
Okay.
So these two things inside this narrative that ties them together, and then Nick's at the end bookending the whole entire thought.
That's so cool. So Ingo Swann's Lost Works. And so if you had thought that you had everything down about Ingo Swann, no. Here's a whole different room. And not only that, a mansion with the big, huge, ginormous rooms that have hidden doors and all that good stuff. This is fantastic. So, all right. So that'll be available. And then Nick is also doing the presentation. So we have actually time to mention that, the presentation. And I'm looking at my page, so I'm going to have you fill. So where's the presentation with the International Remote Viewing Convention?
So we'll be online and you can find the link on IRVA, which is the International Remote Viewing Association's conference webpage.
Okay. And so one way or the other, more new information from Ingo Swann. And if you ever were curious and wanted to improve your own abilities, whether it's PK or psychic knowing, remote viewing, all of that, Ingo Swann is a tremendous resource. Even after he's no longer in the physical, he is still teaching, he's still working. And if you want to hear from him, just ask, hey, Ingo, what do you think? Can you help me? He's listening. Thank you, Ellie. I appreciate your time. We're going to continue and add a longer form of this interview on the website, Wendy's Coffee House. Ellie, thank you. You are not done. You got more work with him, too, because the art is also part of his library arsenal. And he's got some work with that, I hope, that's coming out, too.
I hope so, too.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. And again, wendyscoffeehouse.com. You can check out the website, links, and more. I'm trying to think how quickly I'll get that up, but I don't know right now because everything's up in the air. So just check out the website, and we'll go from there. Till next time, stay curious. See ya.